Well, good morning, friends and brethren. So very good to see you this morning. And while we have several away, it's good to see that we have some visitors with us. Very glad that that you are here today. God is our strength. I know that seems like kind of a simple point, but sometimes I'm afraid we just don't get it. Sometimes I think we forget what it is to look to God and fully and completely trust Him, lean on Him, find our hope and strength in Him. The words come easy, God is our strength, but do we really mean that? And is that what people can see even in our lives? In the book of Jeremiah chapter 17, there's a passage I want us to look at. I think it gives us some insight into the people of God long ago. There's some figurative language here that describes the sins of Judah. Their attitude is what has moved them so far away from God. And there is a warning here. And we look at this just to be reminded what can happen to even us, those who call ourselves the people and the sons of God. God had done so much for Israel and had blessed them in so many ways and had proven His power and strength and might to them time and again. And yet continually they would forget who God was. We look at the text, Jeremiah chapter 17. Judah's sin is engraved with an iron tool, inscribed with a flint point, on the tablets of their hearts, and on the horns of their altars. Even their children remember their altars and Asherah poles, beside the spreading trees and on the high hills. My mountain in the land, and your wealth and all your treasures, I will give away as plunder, together with your high places, because of your sin throughout your country. Through your own fault, you will lose the inheritance I gave you. I will enslave you to your enemies in a land you do not know, for you have kindled my anger, and it will burn forever. Those are powerful words. Harsh words, even, we think. Can you believe that God is speaking like that to His people? And yet those who are called His people have moved so far away from them, from God, that it seems that they could even hardly be identified as the people of God. And let's understand that it was sin that caused this attitude. And their sin was embedded in them just as an iron tool inscribes a tablet, leaving a permanent mark. So deep was this mark that it affected them for generations. Even their children were affected. Having seen and been influenced by the vain worship of their parents, even they had their Asherah poles, they had their idols, they had their gods. Some may have thought this to be kind of strange language for God to use against His own people, but they were hardly His people anymore. They had moved so far away from, for the love of idols, they had moved away from God. And God's anger was kindled against them. The text continues on in verse 5 where it says, "This is what the Lord says. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who depends on flesh for his strength and whose heart turns away from the Lord. He will be like a bush in the wastelands. He will not see prosperity when it comes. He will dwell in the parched places in the desert, in a salt land where no one lives." That's powerful imagery. I mean, you can get pictures in your mind when you think about what God is describing right here. And it's destruction, desolation. And it's all caused. This curse that comes upon them is because that they have moved so far from God. They're trusting in men. For physical might, they would trust in their enemies. Man can never succeed by doing that. It's just like a bush dying in the desert. A bush that is in a barren land, desolate, uninhabited. Such is the result. This is the result of trusting in man. And it's not a pleasant picture. But the text goes on. We read at verse 7. "But blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in Him. He will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves always are green. It has no worries in a year of drought, and it never fails to bear fruit. What a contrast. I mean, what a contrast is being presented before us. That of a bush that's dying in a desolate land compared to a tree planted by water that flourishes always. This is the difference, my friends, of placing our trust in man or placing our trust in God. The choice is ours. God has always made it that way. He has always given us that choice. And the contrast here is extreme. The curses, the blessings. All because of where our heart is at, what we choose to do and who we choose to be. We know that we must trust in God. We know we must trust in God. And yet still we struggle. Still we struggle. Our faith wavers. We know that He must be our source of strength, but sometimes we fail to look at Him. We think about the children of Israel of old, and time and again we can say, what's wrong with them? How could they do that? How could they turn their back on God? And yet, every time we sin, we do the same thing. Every time in days of weakness and trial we fail to turn to God and we move farther away from Him, we do the same thing. God is the source of our strength. Indeed, He is, if we will turn to Him, if we will trust in Him. It is interesting to me that there are so many powerful stories throughout the Bible that demonstrate to us the power and the strength of God. And how He will bless us when we turn to Him. We're going to look at a number of these this morning, and I hope that you'll be following along. We're going to Numbers chapter 13 right now. Numbers chapter 13. And we take up in the Bible story where Israel has walked up now to the gates of the Promised Land. They're about ready to cross over. God has brought them here. God has cared for them. He has blessed them in so many ways. And yet still they are going to struggle with the decision that is to be made. Think about the circumstances. Think about what God has demonstrated to them. His power has been demonstrated to them time and time again. Not only has He brought them out of the land of Egypt, out of bondage, but He demonstrated His power in the plagues that came upon the people that would not release them. Where no one could doubt, no one could question, even Pharaoh knew the power of Jehovah God. God demonstrated His power again as their enemies were close at hand. He divided the Red Sea and they crossed over safely, and He destroyed their enemies behind them. As they traveled through the desert, God was there. And as they worshiped Him, as they built a tabernacle for worship to God, a place of His very presence, God was there with them. The faith of the Israelites should be without compromise. They had seen the power of God demonstrated time and again. But such often is not the case of man. Man's faith wavers. Sometimes it seems so easily. And as they are at the border, ready to cross into the land that God has promised to give to them, 12 spies are sent into the land. 10 of those spies come back with unfavorable reports. Oh, we could never make it here. We could never conquer the land. The people are like giants. They're too great for us. What are they thinking? Their strength, their success thus far in their journey has nothing to do with their own strength, but the strength that is found in God. Joshua and Caleb stand out to be unique in the situation. They understand the power of God. Their faith was sure. Their faith was strong. Their faith was immovable. And the faith and the confidence possessed by Caleb and Joshua was so evident. In chapter 13, in Numbers chapter 13, we're looking at verse 30. As we step in the story, the exchange that's taking place between Joshua and Caleb and the others who had spied out the land. Then Joshua silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." But then there was the argument that came from the other men that we can't attack these people. Remember, they were afraid. They're too strong. They're too powerful for us. And the people rebel, not just against Joshua and Caleb, but really They rebel against God. In chapter 14, verse 7, the text continues. It says, go to verse 6, Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will lead us into the land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will be swallowed by them." No, that we will swallow them up. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them. What stands out to me is that the Lord is with us. Joshua and Caleb knew that. They understood that. They had confidence in that. It sure is hard to be outnumbered. And Joshua and Caleb were two among many. Two who were trying to stand for what's right. Two who were demonstrating their faith in God against so many. But their faith did not waver, and it became evident that their trust was in the Lord. As for the rest of Israel, they paid a horrible price for rejecting God. They paid a horrible price for their lack of faith. Chapter 14, verse 21 says, "Nevertheless, as surely as I live, and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of the men who saw my glory and the miraculous signs I performed in Egypt and in the desert, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised on oath to their forefathers. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. But because my servant Caleb is a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went to, and his descendants will inherit it." The faith of Joshua and Caleb become evident as the story goes on. They, in fact, do inherit the promised land after this unfaithful generation is gone. What I hope we can see, what I hope we can understand, is that we must understand that our strength is in the Lord. Without Him, we have no hope. Without Him, we are nothing. The children of Israel were afraid to cross into the land that God has promised to give them because their faith was not what it needed to be. They were depending on their own strength and not that of the Lord. Our strength will never be enough. But with the Lord, we can have strength that will help us to conquer and to endure. There's another story a few pages over in Joshua chapter 6. You'll know all of these stories as we go to them one by one. They're all familiar to us. But sometimes we just have to stop and think about these simple Bible stories that teach us so much about what faith in God is really about. 40 years after the experience of Joshua and Caleb demonstrating their faith at the borders of the promised land, the time has actually come where they have entered in. And a whole other generation now of those who have demonstrated their faith before God, entering into the promised land. But one of the first obstacles they face is the city of Jericho that has to be conquered. It's a great city, a walled city, and the walls must have looked impenetrable. If you can just imagine what the children of Israel were thinking, they've crossed over the river and there they are, and they can see in the distance the city of Jericho and its great walls. And yet the Lord is telling them that they have to conquer this city. "It is yours," they said. "The city is yours," is what the Lord said. Joshua chapter 6, verse 1, "Now Jericho was tightly shut up because of the Israelites. No one went in and no one came out. Then the Lord said to Joshua, 'See, I have delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its kings and its fighting men.'" You have to wonder a little bit just what the children of Israel thought. How can we conquer a walled city as great as this? A city that has its own king, a city with its own soldiers and fighting men. But God instructed Joshua. He told Joshua exactly what they have to do to capture the city. And it was, to say the least, an unlikely method of capture. But they obeyed. They followed exactly what the Lord said. They marched around the city for 6 days. And on the seventh day, of course, just as God instructed, they marched around the city and the walls fell. Unlikely in the eyes of men? Yes. But the capture is not due to man's strength. And the point has to be made once again. It's not about the strength of man. It's about the power of God. It's about the power of having faith in all that God says and simply taking His word and trusting what He says and submitting to what He says. Joshua understood that. Joshua understood the need and the importance of just doing what God says. And the walls fell. If we could have such a faith, if we could just simply have such a faith in the strength of God, that regardless of what He says to us, regardless of what He requires of us, if we would just do what He says, the walls will fall down. He will help us to conquer whatever obstacles and issues and problems we face in this life. God has the power to help us do that. If we will but have faith in Him, accept His will, accept His way. There's an interesting story in the seventh chapter of the book of Judges. It's in a period of time with the children of Israel where they are led by judges. Gideon happens to be the judge at this time. And he is faced with needing to lead the children of Israel against a formidable foe. The Midianites have surrounded them, essentially. And this is a battle that has the markings of a bloodbath for Israel. Because the Midianites were a powerful people, and they had a powerful army, 135,000 soldiers. But God is not on the side of the Midianites. God is on the side of His people, His chosen people, the children of Israel. There's preparation that's made for the battle, but the preparation is unlike anything we've seen before. You would think that preparation for a battle with soldiers would require soldiers going through certain training, being able to improve their strength, demonstrate that they have some ability to fight, to carry a sword, to go into battle, bravery. All of these being attributes of a good soldier, we would think. Undoubtedly, this would be the kind of soldiers that the Midianites had. Those who knew something about fighting, something about soldiering. That's why they were in the army. But God told Gideon that you have too many men. Well, they already had far less than the Midianites had. But God said, you have too many men. How can you have too many men for battle? That just seems so peculiar to me. We are in Judges chapter 7. We begin at verse 1. Early in the morning, Jerubbaal, or that is Gideon, and all his men camped at the spring of Harod. The camp of Midian was north of them in the valley near the hill of Morah. And the Lord said to Gideon, you have too many men for me to deliver Midian into your hands, in order that Israel may not boast against me that her own strength has saved her. Announce now to the people, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. Verse 4. But the Lord said to Gideon, there are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will sift them for you there. If I say, this one shall go with you, he shall go. But if I say, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So Gideon took the men down to the water, and there the Lord told him, separate those who lap up the water with their tongues like a dog from those who kneel down to drink. 300 men lapped with their hands to their mouths. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. Peculiar. I don't know of a time where soldiers have been sorted out quite this way. But the Lord has a plan. He has a purpose. And He's weeding out those that are not needed for the battle that is to come. Verse 7. The Lord said to Gideon, "With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the other men go, each to his own place." So Gideon sent the rest of the Israelites to their tents, but kept the 300 who took over the provisions and the trumpets of the others. Just so we understand, the Midianites have 135,000 soldiers. They have a large army. Gideon now stands proudly with his force of 300 men who have proven that they know how to drink water from the brook. That seems to be the only thing that they have proven at this point. They've not proven themselves to be soldiers at all. Whose power is to be displayed? The soldiers? Israel? Gideon? No. It's about the power of God. Because even as He has already said to them that He will save the Israelites, it's about the power of God. 300 men whose fighting skills were not important. Their only ability here was to lap water out correctly from the bush or from the branch, to be able to carry a torch, to be able to break a pot, and to be able to blow a trumpet. That's all they do in battle. But it's the Lord who is in control. It's not about the soldiers. It was not about the ability of the army. It was about God's power. The hope for God's people and the hope for us is in the strength of God. It's in the power of God. It's not about us. It's about God and our willingness to submit to Him, to find our hope and our faith and our strength in Him, so that when the battles of life come upon us, when the issues of life seem so overwhelming, it's not about our strength, it's about God's. If we will just turn to Him. 1 Samuel chapter 14. 1 Samuel chapter 14, we find Saul is king over Israel. Saul was king because God appointed him as such. And when He appointed Saul as king, it was because he trusted in God. He was a man of God. And he was humble before God. The sad story is that over time, Saul started to trust in himself. And he thought too well of himself and not enough of God. And that led for some tremendous problems for Saul. Just as it leads to tremendous problems for each of us when we trust in ourselves and not in God. In 1 Samuel chapter 14, we find that the Philistine army has surrounded Saul and all of his men. Many of Saul's men have already scattered. They've already seen that this was a hopeless cause. That is, as you look at man's army against man's army, they could see that they were in trouble and that they had no hope. And so many had already left, and fearing slaughter, Saul, becoming impatient and more concerned, seeing the writing on the wall, so to speak, knowing that he's outnumbered, knowing that his army is fleeing, knowing that he doesn't have the strength of the army to stand up against the Philistines, he keeps waiting for the prophet Samuel to come and give him some instruction to give him the will of God. As Saul gets impatient, and he offers a sacrifice. But oh no, wait a minute, that's not the position of the king. The man of God could have handled that. Once again, he acted as he thought was best. When the prophet Samuel got there into Saul, he already knew what Saul had done. He rebuked Saul. "What have you done?" the prophet asked Saul, verse 11. And Saul replied, "When I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come at the set time and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, I thought, now the Philistines would come down against me from Gilgal, and I have not sought the Lord's favor. So I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering." But what seemed like a good idea to King Saul was not pleasing to God, because it was not from the instructions that God had given. But King Saul thought well enough of himself that, "I can do this. I will seek the counsel of God." Verse 13, Samuel says, "You acted foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God that he gave you. If you had, he would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time. But now your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him as leader of his people because you have not kept the Lord's command." You know, in some ways it's the same story over and over. Here is the result. Here is what happens when we disobey God. In the meantime, there's another story going on. Israel needs a rallying point. It's Saul's son, Jonathan, who knows something about looking to God. He has not forgotten God. And though greatly outnumbered, Jonathan went up against the Philistine camp. He had confidence. He had great confidence. Not in himself. It wasn't about Jonathan. It was about faith in God. And Jonathan had that kind of confidence in God. Chapter 14. Verse 6, the text says, "Jonathan went to his young armor bearer, 'Come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised fellows. Perhaps the Lord will act in our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few.'" Jonathan knew, Jonathan understood that the power would be from God. That's where the strength would come from. And God helped them. In the latter part of verse 12, Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Climb up after me. The Lord has given them into our hand." And indeed he had. And the Philistines would go running away. God was with them. The attack sent a powerful message to the Philistines and to Israel. Israel would in turn, when they saw the Philistines running, they would be reminded that God was on their side and they would go after the Philistines. Israel rallied, and as verse 23 would say, "The Lord rescued Israel that day." Finally, they understood the point. The Lord was with them. The Lord rescued Israel. When will we learn? I mean, it's not just about Israel. When will we learn that God has no limitation to His power? It's not limited at all. There is no limitation to God's ability. Our strength is found in Him. Sometimes we limit His power. Sometimes we do not take advantage of His strength because of our faith. Because our faith is too small. Because we will not depend on Him. Because we will not turn to Him. And God cannot demonstrate His faith through us if we won't turn to Him. There's the familiar story of David and Goliath. It teaches so many powerful lessons. We're here once again. Israel had lost its faith. When will they learn? I'm still just amazed. When will they learn? All the times that God has come and rescued them, all the times when they got low enough and they would turn to God, how His strength would be demonstrated. Here, once again, Israel has lost its faith. And they are cowering in fear of the Philistines. And for 40 days, the Philistines sent out the giant Goliath, taunting them, "Who will fight? 9 feet tall, a bronze helmet, a coat of armor, legs covered with bronze, a javelin and a sword. Who would be ready to sign up to fight him?" Then comes along this little young boy, David, who will stand against this impressive and scary foe, who will make an important lesson, teach an important lesson to those who are not trusting in God. When David entered into the picture, he knew right off what he was going to do. David knew and understood right off what needed to happen. Chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, last part of verse 26, David says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Because he understands that if God is with them, there is no foe that is too great. David could not believe that Israel, the people of God, were bowing down to the ungodly, that they were cowering down to the ungodly. He prepared for battle. And David's speech is interesting. Verse 45, beginning. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I will give the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and He will give all of you into His hands. Indeed, God would be with them." David had no reason to fear Goliath because David knew that God was with him. Complete and absolute faith in God. And the strength that David possessed was not his own. It was that which comes from God. The battle is the Lord's. I love that phrase. The battle is the Lord's. We've been singing a song recently that says just that over and over again. The battle belongs to the Lord. When are we going to believe that? Why couldn't Israel understand that consistently? And we look back to Israel and again we say, what was wrong with them? What's wrong with us? What's wrong with us? When we deal with issues, we battle with problems in life that seem to be formidable to us, and we don't turn to God. The power to overcome the problems and issue in this life have nothing to do with our own power and strength. When we have to face the enemy, we have to do so with God holding our hand. When we think about David facing Goliath, the story really is not about David. We need to be careful how we tell the story. When we tell our children the story about David and Goliath, it's not a story about David. It's really not. It's a story about the power of God and what faith in God can do and how God can bless us and encourage us and strengthen us and help us to stand up for what is right, even when we are outnumbered, even when we are the minority. Even when there are issues of life pressing down so hard on us, we think we can never make it. We can never endure. Well, we can't without God. But with Him, we can do all things that are right and that is good. When will we learn that God will help us with our battles with the enemies? Our strength is in God. There's one other example. Judah faced the threat of Assyria. And this was just an incredible threat. By this point in time in the Bible story, Israel is no more. I mean, the northern kingdom, Israel, has been conquered by Assyria. They've been taken captive and carried away. Assyria is breathing down on the borders of Judah. They were just a small country, enemies on all sides. What hope did they have? The outlook was bleak. That's an understatement. But then they had a king that came along that was so different from the kings they have had for years now. Hezekiah, truly one of the greatest kings of the divided kingdom. And he ruled with great zeal to bring the people of Judah back closer to God. And they did move back closer to God. He restored temple worship and the feast days that had long been forgotten. And once again, Judah was worshiping God. And they hadn't done that in a long time. In 2 Kings chapter 18, at verse 5, It says, Hezekiah trusted in the Lord, the God of Israel, and there was no one like him among all the kings of Judah, either before him or after him, and he held fast to the Lord and did not cease to follow him. He kept the commands of the Lord that the Lord had given Moses, and the Lord was with him. He was successful in whatever he undertook. He rebelled against the king of Assyria and did not serve him. God would bless them. He blessed King Hezekiah. He blessed the people when they turned to him and when they followed him. One of his greatest challenges came in the face of an advancing army, an overwhelming army that seemingly no one could withstand. And at the hand of the Assyrian king, Israel was already no more. Many had assumed the same fate then for Judah, but Hezekiah, because of King Hezekiah and the great faith that he demonstrated, because of the faith that he had in God, when Judah faced the threats of the king of Assyria, the king backed up. As the armies approached, Hezekiah prayed. Chapter 19, beginning of verse 14. Hezekiah received the letter from the messengers and they read it, that is, the messengers from the king of Assyria. Then he went up to the temple of the Lord and spread it out before the Lord. And Hezekiah prayed to the Lord, O Lord, God of Israel, enthroned between the cherubim, you alone are God over all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Give ear, O Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, O Lord, and see. Listen to the words of Sennacherib, that Sennacherib has sent to insult the living God. It is true, O Lord, that the Assyrian kings have laid waste these nations and their lands. They have thrown their gods into the fire and destroyed them, for they were not gods, but only wood and stone fashioned by men's hands. Now, O Lord, our God, deliver us from his hand, so that all the kingdoms on earth may know that you alone, O Lord, are God. God would answer his prayer. I love just reading that prayer. It in every way demonstrates his hope, his faith, his trust in God, knowing that God, Jehovah God, to whom he was praying, had all power and strength. The Lord answered his prayer in a resounding way. Verse 35. That night the angel of the Lord went out and put to death 185,000 men in the Assyrian camp. When the people got up the next morning, there were all the dead bodies. So Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, broke camp and withdrew. And he returned to Nineveh and stayed there. We need to not forget to lean on the Lord. Power and strength is found in Him. Why can't we understand that? Why can't we learn that? Why can't we demonstrate that? But we can. We can know all of those things and we can demonstrate that. So many times God has shown Himself powerful and has shown Himself the source of our strength. And the record shows that time and again, that we can have faith and trust in Him, that He is our God, that He is consistent, that He has all power, that He will answer our prayers. If we will put our faith and trust in Him, He will be with us. He will walk with us. He will carry us. Even as He has done with His people time and again, He is God Almighty. He is strong enough. And even when we are not, He is strong enough. And He will help us. He is strong enough to lean on. And when we think we can't go on, when issues of life become so great and we think that we cannot carry on, He will not let our faith fail. He will pick us up if we'll depend on Him. When the enemy seems so strong that we think that we can never overcome the enemy, God will help us overcome if we will depend on Him. God is strong enough to give spiritual strength. He will uphold our faith. If we will just turn to Him, He will take us by the hand. He will strengthen us. He will empower us and give us faith to endure. God has proven Himself time and again. And we can be sure that He will be there for us. He will take our hand and He will never, ever let us down. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. It's what the Apostle Paul wrote to the Christians long ago. It's a powerful statement and one that needs to be in our mind always. And when we face temptation, when we face problems that we think are insurmountable, when we walk up to the wall of Jericho and we think there is no way that we can get over this wall, there's no way we can tear it down, we can't of ourselves. But with God, all things are possible. With God, the walls came tumbling down for the children of Israel long ago. And there are walls, there are issues that we face day by day that God will help us through if we will just depend on Him and give Him all of our heart and soul. And the issues of this life will melt away. Because that's the way God has always dealt with those who would be His people. He has always provided. He has always cared for those who are His own. And He will bless us. And He will care for us. And He will provide for us the things that He sees that we need. But most importantly, to those who are penitent in heart, to those who have humbled themselves, to those who are willing to submit to them, to those who have found faith in Him through His Word, He provides eternal hope, salvation that comes through His Son. Even today, is there one here today who is ready to give their lives to the Lord? Through Jesus Christ, hope is found. Baptism for the remission of sins is what the penitent believer finds. And that is our greatest hope. And we can have every reason of confidence that God will bless us, that He will save us when we put our faith and our trust in Him and obey Him in all things that He has given us. He will be our God if we will just be His people. If you need to render yourself, submit yourself to the Lord this day, don't delay. Please submit yourself to Him now. Can we help you? Would you come as we stand and sing?